Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this act, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Let's ride.
Time for the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium. Take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger Baseball.
What's up, Dodger fans? Happy Sunday evening. NFL week one for those who care. Hope your team won. My team certainly didn't. We're 0-1, baby, Los Angeles Rams. This is Kevin Klein speaking. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are coming off a fantastic weekend. They're now 86-57 with not too many games left in the 2024 season as the Dodgers look to win another NOS crown. More on the National League standings as a whole in just a second, but your Los Angeles Dodgers are six games up now on the San Diego Padres. It was just four the other day, so they're gaining some ground. The Arizona Diamondbacks are falling off a little too. They're 6.5 games back of the Los Angeles Dodgers, so that NL West crown is definitely within reach as you've got a healthy six-game lead and some soft opponents coming up. So that's some good news if you're a Los Angeles Dodgers fan. They won the series against the Cleveland Guardians this weekend, one of a very formidable opponent out of the American League. They took two games out of the three-game series, and they beat some good pitchers as well. So I'm very happy with how the Dodgers have played. I'm glad to be joined by an OG and longtime Incline listener, Steve Moore, who's in the house. You can follow him on X as well. I believe you go by Dodge16_12.
Correct. Yeah.
So welcome to the show. You've been on before. I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on the Dodgers play as of late?
It's been really refreshing. I was kind of getting scared on Friday's game because they just didn't look very good because they had lost the previous game. So they lost two in a row. So I was getting a little scared, but they looked really good yesterday and they looked really good today too. And they're playing really good, and their pitching is in shambles, but what are you going to do? That's the Dodgers in September every year, so.
Yep. Kind of give you guys an overlook of what we're going to talk about today. Of course, we'll take your guys' questions and comments. So if you're in the YouTube chat, hit that like button, smash that like button, be a subscriber, drop questions, drop comments. If I deem them appropriate for the show, I'll get to them. We're going to talk about the Dodgers and where they look right now in the National League and what they kind of have to do to hold on to the one seed and what opponents they might be facing. I want to talk about Jack Flaherty and just how good he's been for the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers are dealing with some injuries, like Steve kind of foreshadowed. Gavin Stone was added to the injured list. We avoided a big scare with Teoscar Hernandez as well. And then I want to kind of focus on just how hot Mookie Betts has been and kind of the impact he's had. And then kind of to, near the end of the show, this Shohei Ohtani MVP nonsense that's been going around on the especially the East Coast media. So what's up, MWG? What's up, Justin Yamas? Hello, Craig Osterberg, Daniel Berry Sports Highlight. And yeah, that's everyone in the comments. So we've got a fantasy baseball comment here. Hey, is this the podcast groupie? That is your nickname at one point.
Yeah, that was actually my fantasy name after whatever his name was called me that. So I had to change my name to that.
Well, that trade backfired big time for me because Aaron Judge didn't do shit this last week. So I think I lost. So that sucked. Thanks a lot, Judge. Oh, well.
I'm still in 10th place, so it didn't really do anything for me either.
Okay, so Jack Flaherty was an absolute beast for the Dodgers. First off, since being traded to the Dodgers, he's got a 5-1 record, a 2.61 ERA, 47 strikeouts, and just 10 walks. This guy has just been everything and more that you could ask for the Dodgers. He was insane against the Guardians. He completely shut them down. I believe he went 7 1/3 innings, had 7 strikeouts, pulling up the hits, only 4 hits. Yeah, or so he had 6 strikeouts, 4 hits, and yeah, 7 1/3 of shutout baseball. That was really shortening up the game for Dave Roberts because he only needed Michael Kopech and Evan Phillips to record 5 outs. So I'm not expecting Jack Flaherty to ever pitch that deep in the postseason, but this guy has been a workhorse for the Dodgers. Every time they hand him the ball, he's pretty much a walking quality start machine. And I mean, he's been better for the Dodgers so far on a competitive team than he has been statistically for the Detroit Tigers, who are at that point a cellar dweller and not in competitive games. So Jack Flaherty, maybe the Dodgers won't be able to re-sign him, but in terms of his deadline impact for the Dodgers, anything you want to add for hit this guy?
No, I mean, I just pitched great today. It was really nice to see. And actually, Kopech did too. Those both of the guys that we traded for were just killer today.
Yep, he, Michael.
And I believe that no walks today too for Flaherty too. So that's really nice to see that no free passes.
Absolutely. So I was kind of thinking about this topic off the top of my head before I went live. So Jack Flaherty, as I said, they acquired him at the deadline. If we were to do a ranking of like best starting pitchers that Andrew Friedman has acquired post right before the deadline, I think if we're being non-biased, Max Scherzer probably won. Throw out that bullshit with the dead arm and all that. You look at the stats, Scherzer kept this Dodgers team in the hunt. They won 106 games. He'd probably be my number one. And then if you don't remember how dominant Rich Hill was for the Dodgers in 2016 post-deadline, I was looking at his stats the other day, and I completely marveled and kind of forgot just how good he was for the Dodgers. So he was dealing with the blisters. I definitely remember that being a thing. So he only made 6 regular season starts. But over 34 innings, Rich Hill had a 1.83 ERA and an 0.786 whip for the Dodgers, which you probably don't associate Rich Hill with that dominance, but that was insane. And it makes a lot of sense why the Dodgers paid him the bag after that. And he was pretty good in the playoffs as well. Just quickly looking up his playoff stats. So against the Nationals, he wasn't good. He had a 6.43 ERA and 2 starts, but against the Cubs, he was able to pitch 6 innings of shutout baseball. And the Cubs, of course, went on to win the World Series. So that's probably my number two. I actually think so far Jack Flaherty has been better than Yu Darvish, which is the other big name I was going to pull out of my hat. So I honestly would give the edge to Jack Flaherty right now. And that's kind of a big deal because Yu Darvish was the hottest commodity around the 2017 trade deadline. And we associate him as one of the biggest Dodgers grabs, but I think Jack Flaherty is in my top three right now. I don't know if there's any other names you can think of in the last, we're in like 10 years of Friedman now.
No, the only other name that came to my mind that I remember a long time ago, and he was decent, was Ricky Nolasco, but that was the Coletti era.
Yep. Yeah, he was pretty good too. But yeah, I think he was Ned Coletti. Matt Latos was awful. Lance Lynn wasn't very good. Alex Wood would end up working out later in the long run, but in 2015, he wasn't impactful. So I'm trying to think if there's anyone else I'm completely whiffing on, and I'm sure someone's yelling at their freaking wall right now because I'm probably blanking on someone. But no, I think those are the guys. So yeah, how about Jack Flaherty? What a move. And I know the Dodgers got kind of fortunate, because if you haven't read the reports, the New York Yankees were going to actually get this deal done. They had it lined up, they had it agreed on, and this deal was set in stone, and the Yankees backed out on it because there were some medical reports that they didn't like. And so the Dodgers worked it out, and I think we're very lucky right now that the Yankees were cowards and didn't want Jack Flaherty on their roster for some reason.
I hadn't heard that the Yankees. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wonder what they saw, because obviously they didn't see what was happening.
Yeah, apparently it was related to some back issues. So, big, my hot take. If the Dodgers get past the NLDS, they win it all. Love it, big. The NLDS apparently has been the biggest hurdle for the Dodgers the last 2 years. So let's get past the NLDS, I agree. Get to that NLCS, and hopefully that leads us to a World Series. Justin Yamas, Dick Mountain flirted with perfection twice with us, and he had the infamous Game 4 performance. I think Rich Hill took a perfect game or a no-hitter. Did he even go past the ninth? Did he go into the 10th inning?
Yeah, they lost on a walk-off.
Yeah, against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That game was crazy. Craig mentioning, seems like Shohei will make the 50-50 mark. That's a great accomplishment. We'll talk about that later. And Frank Martinez saying Brandon Morrow. And yes, Brandon Morrow was good, but that was not a starting pitcher, nor was he a trade deadline pickup. They signed him to a minor league deal and put him back together in AAA and then called him back up. But yes, Brandon Morrow was, if we're talking about top tier Andrew Friedman under the radar reclamation reliever projects, Brandon Morrow, you could argue, is at the top of any list, because he's up there with Evan Phillips and Anthony Bonda, you can throw in there. Michael Kopech, you can make a case. But yeah, Brandon Morrow was kind of, well, Joe Blanton, I guess, was the original, but Brandon Morrow was the main one that most of us remember being a big part of the Dodgers, what should have been their 2017 World Series title run.
Was that the start of the Prior Lab, 2017?
No, actually. Prior, I think, came on in 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. But we move on. So the Dodgers, as I said, they're 86-57. So to put that in perspective right now, that is the best record in all of Major League Baseball. They've got a one-game lead on the Philadelphia Phillies right now. They've got a four-game lead on the Milwaukee Brewers. And then the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves round out the top six. But the Braves and the Mets are currently tied. They have both a 78-65 record. And if you look ahead on the Dodgers' schedule, it's coming up pretty soon. They've got four games at the Atlanta Braves. So the Dodgers could potentially knock them out of wild card contention if the Mets can take care of business on their end. But the way it's lined up right now, the Dodgers, I think, as the one seed, would play the winner of the San Diego Padres and Arizona Diamondbacks. And for whatever reason, we seem to keep getting an NL West opponent in the NLDS. If that were to come to fruition, that'd be the fifth year in a row we play an NL West team in the NLDS.
I put in the chat earlier, the Discord chat, that I honestly want the two seed. I would much rather play either the Mets, Braves, whatever, winner of that, and or Milwaukee than deal with the NL West opponent or the Phillies in the four game seven game series, not the five game. That's just me personally.
Speaking of the Discord chat, I'm dropping the link below for those that are not in the Discord. Highly recommend. We've got over 100 people, and every Dodgers game, we've got a full live chat going with people dropping their takes and reactions. And you can catch up on the latest news and even rumors when it's off season or deadline talk. Everyone's doing their part, and it's been a very good year one of the Discord chat. So my issue is, I feel like if the Brewers and Braves were to face in the NLDS, the Brewers are just going to get completely steamrolled, and the Braves in a best of five series do worry me, especially with the way Chris Sale has pitched, and then Max Fried occasionally shows up against us. Charlie Morton's up there in age, but he can still toss a gem every once in a while. But offensively, they're definitely in shambles. They've lost some big bats, of course, with Ronald Acuna Jr. being out for the year. They don't have Jock Peterson this time because he was a big part of their 21 run. He's moved on since.
But they have Kevin Biggio now.
They have Kevin Biggio, who must be a mole because he knows all the Dodgers trade secrets. But if it's the Mets and the Brewers, sign me up. If we can't beat those teams, fire everyone, because every single year it seems like we're getting an easier opponent in the NLDS and we can't get the job done. The Diamondbacks won like 82 games last season, for crying out loud. This season, like, the Mets and the Brewers, like, they're good teams, but they're not anywhere near the Dodgers caliber. The Diamondbacks and the Padres, they both know the Dodgers pretty well. But I don't know. I just feel like if we were to get the Brewers, they can't hit. You get the Mets, they're the Mets. We've got to beat the Mets. I don't know. It's an interesting case right now. We'll see how the Dodgers kind of scout this out. My guess is they want the one seed because they're still thinking they want home field advantage over the Philadelphia Phillies. Assuming both teams make it to the NLCS. But at the end of the day, if you want to be the best team in baseball, then you gotta beat whoever comes your way and not be like the Boston Celtics, who got a Mickey Mouse run to their most recent NBA championship. So in the chat, Nicholas Dugan, who was on the show a few weeks ago, Dodgers should still get the one seed. Braves and Mets could very well pass up the Padres and D-backs for the top two wildcard spots. That is a good point. The Diamondbacks especially have been slipping recently. The Padres have dropped a couple games. You never know. I guess we'll see what happens. And then Justin Yama saying Atlanta can't hit. They're missing Acuna, Albies, and Riley. That is true, but maybe they have another Eddie Rosario in their system, because that was a guy they took a flyer on and he killed us. So I'm not sleeping on any of the Atlanta Braves hitters. They beat us already.
It's really good.
Yep.
Sorry. Yeah. Sale.
Yep. Justin Yamas, Denver's 2023 finals run was more of a Mickey Mouse run than Boston's 2024 finals run. Justin, I like you, but that's just a terrible take. That is like a god awful take. The Nuggets had to get through the Lakers to get to the finals, but that you're entitled to your opinion. So that's kind of where we're at right now with the standings. The Dodgers are looking good. They're six games up. The NL West, I can see it. We're within sight, and we don't want to. There's been some debates on other shows where they are trying to say that the Dodgers should play the wild card round, and to me that's just a ridiculous claim.
No, absolutely not. Too many stupid things can happen. This team sometimes gets cold. No.
Okay, so the next news and notes I wanted to cover, Gavin Stone went on the injured list, and my goodness, the Dodgers just continue to take blows left and right. Every time it feels like we're getting something good going, someone's coming back, we lose someone else to the injured list. And Gavin Stone is the latest casualty when talking Dodgers starting pitchers. So we know Glasnow's on the IL. Give you an update on him in a second. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is on the IL, but he'll be back Tuesday. Cover more of him later on as well. We've lost River Ryan for the year. It was really high on him to Tommy John surgery. We lost Clayton Kershaw with the toe injury. Who knows if he's coming back? And then, of course, Bobby Miller has just been a train wreck this season. But Gavin Stone was, up until his injury, the only starter who cracked the opening day rotation and managed to stay healthy. And unfortunately, just a few days ago, he went on the IL with shoulder inflammation. And it sounds like it's pretty serious too, because when asked to Dave Roberts, he doesn't even know if Gavin Stone's able to come back this regular season. It's honestly a coin flip. Maybe they can get him back for the DS or the CS, but I'm a little skeptical about him coming back during the regular season just because of the injury. And it sounds like there's some severity to it. So Gavin Stone, in case you didn't know, was 11-5 this season, 3.53 ERA, managed to make 25 starts for the Dodgers and tossed a career high 140 innings pitched. So for me, I was getting pretty comfortable with the idea that Gavin Stone was going to be the Dodgers game four starter. Now with that injury, it looks like it's a huge question mark. Steven.
If he comes back like this, who do they have right now that's healthy that they he can start? Like, you trust Flaherty, that's about all. Because Yamamoto is still a question mark. We don't know what we're going to get from him. And Glasnow is still, he's the same way as Yamamoto. Like, what? Like I said at the beginning, it's always every year in September for us.
Nicholas Dugan dropping some stances right now, and I love to see it. Flaherty should get some serious consideration as the Dodgers' game one starter in the NLDS. There is a good possibility that this might actually happen, because Steve just said it a second ago, we don't know what version of Yamamoto we're about to get. I'll talk about him more later on, but he hasn't pitched since July. So just assuming he'll come back and looking like the Yamamoto pre-injury, that'd be naive. Glasnow is a beast, and I really hope he can pull it together. He'd be my game one starter if he looks healthy, but if he's not stretched out and he's going to look off mechanically, then yeah, you have to look at it this way. Your game one starter is not only going to start game one, but most likely will start an elimination game for you if you reach that point. And with the way Flaherty's throwing, he's got the confidence, he's got the swing and miss stuff, he's been healthy, he's been doing it all for the Dodgers. If I'm in a game five now, you have to really put it together and think, okay, who do I trust the most? And kind of going down the stretch right now, Jack Flaherty has been that guy. And so honestly, there is a real case you could make as Jack Flaherty being your game one starter. Before I personally make that declaration, I want to see what Yamamoto looks like. I want to see what Tyler Glasnow looks like. So I'm hoping that they can both come back and get some innings under the belt, because we're only with about 20 games or so left. So I think Yamamoto might be able to get three or four starts in. Glasnow maybe two, maybe three. We'll see. But yeah, that's a pretty good take. Flaherty, I would agree. Flaherty should at least get the consideration. So we know that Flaherty is going to start. If healthy, Flaherty would start, Yamamoto would start, Glasnow should start. Game four is completely up in the air, and I don't know what the Dodgers are going to do. Walker Buehler has looked a lot better recently. Maybe they could go with him in game four if needed. Landon Knack has actually been pretty solid as well. It'd be a pretty big risk, though, because Landon Knack doesn't have a lot of experience, but I believe in his most recent outing against the Cleveland Guardians in this series, he tied a career high with six innings thrown, got the quality start, only gave up, I believe, a two-run home run, and threw a career high of eight strikeouts. And the Guardians are a good team. They don't strike out a lot. And Knack looked like a stud. Pretty much has been good for the Dodgers every time out for them, unlike Robleski, who's been a gas can. So you got Knack, Buehler, Bobby Miller, he's off. Like, he's off my postseason contention list. Can't even remember his exact stats, but my God, that outing against the Angels was just absolutely putrid. As a reminder, against the Angels, who were a bad team, Miller went five innings, gave up seven earned runs, and surrendered three home runs. On every start, he gives up home runs. August 17th against St. Louis, he gave up two home runs. Versus Tampa Bay, gave up two home runs. Against Baltimore, gave up a home run. Against the Angels, gave up three home runs. The drop-off with Bobby Miller is unexplainable, and I think sports science or Bill Nye the Science Guy would need to come back and publish something in terms of what happened to Bobby Miller.
Yeah, I trust the Hurt Kershaw over Bobby Miller, and that's not saying much. And I'm like, anybody that knows me knows I'm the biggest Kershaw mark there is. But, dear Lord. Yeah.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's HIMS.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
So, yeah, the Dodgers' fourth spot is definitely a wild card right now, and we've got a few weeks left to kind of pencil it together. Maybe someone will come back off the injured list. But for now, we'll wait and see, and that's what these next few weeks are for the Dodgers. It's kind of auditions. So Walker Buehler, Landon Knack, They might have to go bullpen game. I don't know. We'll see. Michael Carrillo believing that Bobby Miller is clearly injured. I could definitely see that. He apparently has been battling with a knee injury all season, and they failed to disclose that until two starts ago when he was hustling to first base and you could see him kind of twerk it. So apparently Bobby Miller's been pitching on a bad knee all season. I don't get it, but we've got Justin Yamas crapping on Bobby Miller's fastball, and for good reason. It's been pretty bad. Even though he throws 100 miles per hour at times, it's not getting the job done. So, yeah, the Dodgers starting rotation. There's some highs, there's some lows, there's some question marks. Seems like that's the theme with the Dodgers every season. It's been about five seasons now. I mean, 2017, 2018, 2019, the Dodgers actually had healthy rotations going into the postseason. And ever since then, we just have to scrap it together and get hope that we can find enough guys to get through. So sucks. I don't know why we continue to deal with these injuries. Andrew Friedman said this is something that they're going to look into more deeply in the offseason. So hopefully they can correct this issue, because it's actually only been getting worse for the Dodgers. There's all kinds of theories of what's going on. I don't need to get into it because we all know, but sucks. I hate seeing all these guys get injured. So speaking of injuries, the Dodgers dodged a big bullet the other day. Teoscar Hernandez took a ball thrown by Matt Boyd of the Guardians, hit his leg. He had to exit the game immediately. And after the game, Dave Roberts was worried and for some reason said they believe it's severe and wouldn't be surprised and will likely end up on the injured list. And so, of course, every Dodgers fan went to bed very nervous that night. And I was like, shit, if we lose this guy, that's going to be a huge blow, because he has just been one of our clutch hitters year one with the Dodgers. I mean, he's been everything and more that you could ask for. I mean, look at these stats. He's got 28 home runs, 87 RBIs, throwing 10 steals, hitting for a solid average as well with 266, and has an 819 OPS. And we were told by Dave Roberts that there was a good chance that he was going to end up on the IL, and said it was bad. Well, in classic Dave Roberts fashion, he was wrong once again. So every time that Dave Roberts proclaims an injury, go the opposite. I don't know who's feeding him these medical reports, or I don't know if Dave Roberts makes them up on the fly, but just a month ago, he said Bruce Star Gratterall tore his hamstring, was going to be out for the season. And then literally a day or two later, they upgraded him from a grade 3 hamstring to a grade 1. So apparently if Dave Roberts says it's bad, I think the opposite, it's actually going to be good. And if Dave Roberts says it's minimal, then it's going to be likely season ending. We've seen that with Emmett Sheehan, who apparently was throwing the baseball and then had Tommy John surgery the next day. We saw that with Max Muncy, who was supposed to miss the minimum and then miss like 2 months. So I don't know what to think anymore, but as a Dodgers fan, it's not really that it's not that comfortable or reassuring when you can't trust what your manager is going to say.
Yeah, exactly. It's been going on for how many years now? Like, we got told Gonsolin, oh, he's fine, he's still pitching. And then, you know, Tommy John. And then we got told, I mean, like you said, I'm not going to repeat what you said, but it's like, I always take everything the opposite of what Dave Roberts says.
Yeah. All right, so Steve, I want to be sensitive to your time, and since you were kind enough to join me, what is something you want to talk about, or do you have any questions for me?
Oh, put me on the spot now. No, honestly, I got nothing. I mean, the topics that you were covering is what I would have talked about. So,
all right, so I'm going to leave one more for you, and then I'll steer the ship from here. But it feels like the Dodgers postseason position players is pretty much set in stone, but there's one spot left: Andy Páez versus Chris Taylor. Which way are you currently leaning?
I would probably lean Páez, just because, one, Chris Taylor can't hit. Páez is a little better. I mean, he hit a home run. Was it today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. He hit a home run yesterday. And honestly, with Edmund on the team, he can go into the infield too. So Edmund's like a way better Chris Taylor. So it's like two positions. It's like two guys for one position that do the same thing. And Edmund is way better than him. So it's like, we don't really need Chris Taylor when we can use Paez. And Paez, I know he's bad against righties, but he can hit lefties. He's a lefty masher.
That he definitely is. So I was pissed off the other night because Chris Taylor was in a situation where the bases were loaded and I believe there was just one out. And this was all set up because this was the game where Teoscar Hernandez had to come out because he got hit by the pitch. So unfortunately for us, Chris Taylor subbed in. And of course, in Dodgers bad luck fashion, Chris Taylor comes up to the plate when it should have been Teoscar Hernandez. With the game on the line, this was going to decide the outcome. Like I said, bases loaded, one out. And what does Chris Taylor do? Grounds into an ending inning double play. Couldn't even lift the ball in the air. It was hard hit, but was right at the shortstop or third baseman, and they turned it easily for a double play. And I felt like I would not, if this was the playoffs, I would not have had Chris Taylor bat there. I would have personally gone Andy Páez. And of course, Andy Páez homered the next day. So I feel like there's some validity in that claim. I feel like since Chris Taylor's come back off the IL, there's been no power. I mean, he actually has no home runs. He's driven in, it looks like, just two runs. Still strikes out a decent amount. I mean, the batting average is decent. Like over his last 15 games, he's hitting .273. But he's also struck out a third of the time. And if you're going to hit the ball to the ground, that's the last place you want to hit it when you have a runner at third with less than two outs. At least get us the sacrifice fly at the very least. And I feel like a guy with Andy Páez can generate that type of torque and get the ball in the air. And I would have gone with him personally. And I don't know, just it rubbed me the wrong way. And you've got accounts that now blocked me, like Dodgers Daily, that think that, you know, Chris Taylor definitely should have been batting in that spot, and that, you know, he hit it hard, so obviously it was the right move. But, like, no, I don't think baseball works like that. You need to hit the ball in the air. I don't care if it's 104 miles per hour. Hit it to the damn outfield at the very least, not to the freaking infielder to turn a double play. So I don't know what some people are smoking.
I would have trusted Austin Barnes over Chris Taylor in that spot.
Oh, and wow.
That's it. I mean, but Barnes is actually, you know, he makes better contact. I mean, I trust him to be able to hit a fly ball. Then Chris Taylor is either going to strike out and do a double play.
That's fair. All right, Steve. Well, I appreciate you joining me this evening. Anything you want to say before you peace out?
No, we're good. Thank you.
All right. Later, Steve. All right. So I'm going to take control from here. I want to get to your guys' questions. Feel free to drop them below in the chat. Smash that like button. Be a subscriber to the Incline Dodgers podcast. Keep the show rolling. Let's talk about all kinds of things Dodgers. I'm going to get to Shohei Ohtani in just a few minutes. There's a debate apparently going on for MVP. The John Heymans of the world and other guys that are Mets fans say that Shohei Ohtani is not the National League MVP. So kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on, is it fair? Is it valid for Francisco Lindor to be the MVP? West Coast bias apparently is what John Heyman's been saying. So we'll talk about all that later. Justin Yamas wants me to talk about Eduardo Rodriguez getting shelled yesterday. I mean, if there's karma in the world, that's absolutely the season that Eduardo Rodriguez has been having for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, he's been a bad, bad contract. So he stole the bag from the Diamondbacks, and I'm glad it's an NL West team that's paying the consequence somehow. So first of all, Rodriguez has two wins, because I remember him going into that Dodger start, had like the most run support in his small sample size. So even though he's been pitching like shit, the Diamondbacks had been scoring runs for him. But Eduardo Rodriguez is 2-2 with a 5.83 ERA over six starts, only 18 measly strikeouts over 29 innings thrown, and has a 1.5 whip. I'm so glad that the Dodgers kicked Equitt's ass. Freaking sweet revenge. You have to believe that the Dodgers were fired up going into that start. Equitt only managed to go four innings, gave up three runs, seven hits, one home run, and I don't see the strikeouts, but I know he didn't have many strikeouts either. So Eduardo Rodriguez has just been a terrible contract. Him and Jordan Montgomery have just been horrible for the Diamondbacks. So thank goodness that a tough team that if they had some good pitching, they might be a game or two back of the Dodgers. But because guys like Equit and Montgomery have been just disasters, like a Madison Bumgarner that Justin is throwing out there in the chat, because that's basically what the Diamondbacks have been getting is the D-backs version of Mad Bum. It'd be a tougher race. So we're fortunate there. We, on the other hand, we got Jack Flaherty. So I am much more happy with Jack Flaherty wearing a Dodgers uniform than Eduardo Rodriguez, who every time I see him throw for any team, regardless, I instantly think of the 2018 World Series where Yasiel Puig took him deep and like a little baby, Equit threw his glove on the ground and looked like a toddler because he knew he gave up a meatball and he should have lost that game. So going through the chat real quick, Nicholas Dugan, Andy Páez is who he leans over because he could see him coming in the clutch versus a left-handed pitcher who's coming out of the bullpen. Absolutely. I mean, let's say we're facing the Padres and they got Tanner Scott. Who do you want facing Tanner Scott? Andy Páez or Chris Taylor? Right now, I feel like it's got to be Andy Páez. Mets fans are delusional as Knicks fans. I mean, Mets fans are even more delusional than Knicks fans, in my opinion. But yeah, New York fans in general, they're pretty delusional between the Knicks, the Mets, the Jets, the Giants, just a bunch of trash teams. That's what he gets, according to Alfonso Lucio. What's up, Alfonso? Christopher like seeing Verlander looking more cooked than Kershaw on Sunday Night Baseball. Justin Verlander looks like someone that needs to hang up the uniform as well. He's actually looked pretty washed this season as well, which is good news for all of us because the Astros are going to make the postseason. And if I had to pick right now who I think the Dodgers have the best shot of beating of the main American League teams. So Cleveland, obviously, I feel like we could hold our own and beat them, but like a more juicier matchup, give me the Astros over like the Yankees or Baltimore. I feel like what I really want right now is to just kick that cheater who named Justin Verlander, who was on that 2017 team. I want to kick his ass. I want to beat Jose Altuve. I want to absolutely shell all the Astros pitchers. I want our revenge. So give me the Astros. I want to strike out Yordan Alvarez left and right. And Steve saying Verlander is getting like $35 million next season. I don't know if he made the vested option. I don't know if he pitched enough innings. I'd have to look into that. Maybe someone like Justin Yamas would have the answer because this guy knows baseball and he's really good in the chat of answering my questions. So I don't know. Maybe Justin will fact check me and see if we can get to that point of the $35 million for Justin Verlander. I don't know if Verlander pitched enough for that vested option. Alfonso Lucio, should the Dodgers pick up Rich Hill? No, absolutely not. And I don't think he's even postseason eligible at this point, because we are at the September 1st cutoff. So guys that are outside of the organization wouldn't be eligible to pitch in the postseason. They'd have to be someone internally on the Dodgers roster. So yeah, no, I don't want Rich Hill. The Red Sox did DFA him. He's not even stretched out. He's been going like one or two innings for the Red Sox prior to the DFA. So yeah. Maria G, welcome Maria G, another regular here. Can't believe the Mariners and Rangers rolled over and let the Astros run away with the division. I mean, outside of last season where the Rangers won the World Series, that's been pretty much every year. These teams just continue to let the Astros run that AL West. You got the Angels, who are super incompetent and haven't been competitive in a decade. You've got the Mariners that pretend to be good but always fade in the second half, because Jerry DePoto doesn't know how to make the right deadline moves. The Texas Rangers, who I just talked about, they got their one World Series, so I'm sure they're good for a while. And then, of course, the Oakland Athletics that are actively tanking. And even though they've had a good record post-All-Star break, The Athletics are obviously not a threat by any means to the Houston Astros for the AL West. So just like I thought, Justin Yahn was pointing out, Justin Verlander definitely won't make that vested option. He needed 140 innings for it. So I think Verlander is going to be a free agent, and honestly wouldn't be surprised if he just retires. I mean, the guy's like 40 at this point, clearly wasn't even a good pitcher this season. Bobby Miller last year didn't even throw 140 innings, and he made every start for us from May on. No way Verlander has 140. Verlander has 81 innings. Aang, what's up, Aang? I don't think I've seen you around here before, so welcome. Strohs wouldn't even make the playoffs if they were in the NL West. I mean, that's just facts. I mean, the Astros are in the most Mickey Mouse division that there is in Major League Baseball. Like I just said, they got the four other teams that are clowns for the most part, and they just continue to let the Astros run that division. I mean, for crying out loud, there's been a couple of years now where the Mariners trade good players, good relievers, good high leverage guys to the Houston Astros to help them. Like, what is going on here? I remember them trading Kendall Graveman to Houston for the hell of it, and then the Mariners clubhouse got robbed the wrong way because that was like their guy out of the pen. So just a bunch of losers. Yeah, if the Astros were in the NL West, they probably aren't better than the Padres. They might not be better than the Diamondbacks, and if obviously the Dodgers. So they're like a fourth place team. So I definitely agree with Aang. That's a great take. They would not probably make the playoffs if they were in the NL West. Okay, so let's talk about Mookie Betts. What are your guys' thoughts on just how Mookie Betts has been playing for the Dodgers as of late? I mean, this guy has been awesome. It's like he hasn't missed a beat since returning from the injured list. So Mookie Betts, he had a triple today. I know he hit a home run the other night. He's hitting 305 with a 396 on base, 911 OPS, 16 home runs, 63 RBIs. I mean, Mookie Betts over his last seven games is hitting 417 with two home runs, eight RBIs, throwing a stolen base. I mean, this guy is just on fire. If there's one thing that we needed from Mookie Betts, it's pretty much him being hot in the month of September so that we can feel like he's got a good rhythm, good momentum heading into October. And it seems like him hitting second has been a blessing in disguise that came with the injury, because this moved Shohei to the leadoff spot. And I don't know if the Dodgers and Dave Roberts would have the courage to move Mookie out of the leadoff spot if he didn't get hurt. And so we might still be looking at Mookie with Shohei hitting second, but because of the injury, they moved Shohei up. And then that's where Shohei kind of went on this torrid run of just stealing a shit ton of bases. And so you've got the Ohtani speed in front of Mookie. So even if Ohtani gets on with a walk or a single, this guy's a threat to steal because obviously he has 46 stolen bases, can get himself into scoring position. And then with Mookie Betts being just the clutch hitter that he's been all season, I'll pull up some clutch stats by Mookie Betts in just a second. But by Shohei getting into scoring position, that's really been setting the table for Mookie Betts to drive in Shohei Ohtani, and that's been leading to a lot of Dodgers runs. I mean, so here we go. Mookie Betts this season with runners in scoring position is batting 377 with a 451 on base, 1100 OPS. We're looking at four home runs, 48 RBIs. With two outs just in general, Mookie Betts is hitting 337 with a 994 OPS. So even in tight pressure situations, Mookie Betts is even doing the damage with two outs. So that was kind of a big thing for the Dodgers in some recent games. They were getting some big rallies, even with two outs. And I know with two outs and runners in scoring position, I think Mookie Betts was hitting like over 400. So in terms of clutchness, Mookie Betts has definitely been him. He's just been awesome for the Dodgers. I mean, every season, it seems like Mookie Betts finds a way to innovate himself and be an awesome bat for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So I'm going to probably pause right here for a minute or so as I drop the link for other people to join the YouTube stream. But I wanted to also give people in the chat some more time to talk about questions or drop comments. And I'll definitely get to all your guys' questions and comments. I do see some in the chat right now. So Don't worry. I will definitely get to that. So bear with me just 1 minute. I'm just going to share this link to my Twitter page. But I'll also pause right here real quick to talk about TickPick, who's been sponsoring the Incline Dodgers for a while now. TickPick is awesome because there's no service fees at checkout. You download the app, go to the TickPick social media as well. They'll have discount codes oftentimes. So if you're looking to go to a concert, there's been a lot of good concerts coming up. October, if you don't know, as a concert goer, is usually one of the best times of the year to go to concerts. And TickPick has no service fees at checkout, and it's often cheaper than most of the other competitors out there. And if you're a huge Dodger fan, which you obviously are because you're on this podcast, check out TickPick, get some Dodgers tickets, try to get a last-minute bobblehead. There's not that many left. There's not that many Dodgers home games left in general. So download the TickPick app. Give them a chance. So 1 second as I tweet this out. Okay. So let's see what we've got in the comments. Justin Yamas. Mookie Betts would have been the MVP this year if he didn't get plunked. I agree. This is a no doubt about it one. I mean, Mookie Betts has a WAR, despite missing all that time. Mookie Betts has a 4.4 WAR, and I did the math the other day. If you were to pace Mookie Betts out over 162 game sample size, Mookie Betts would have had a WAR over 7. He would have had about 28 home runs, over 100 runs driven in, over 100 runs scored, probably 20-something stolen bases, and defensively he'd get the versatility bump because he'd be playing maybe some shortstop, possibly some second base, and some right field. And so I would say that if Mookie Betts had played the whole season, he probably would be the front runner right now for the NL MVP, because there's a lot of boomer heads out there, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty, think that you have to play a position defensively to be an MVP. And that's why Francisco Lindor has been getting some love. Let's see. Maria G, who else thinks that Shohei Ohtani will finish just short of the 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases? So we're at 46 home runs. We're at 46 stolen bases. I think Mookie Betts is going to, I think Shohei Ohtani is going to get the 50 stolen bases. I think that's probably the easier part of the journey at this point. He just has to get on base. He's got to find a way to steal some bases. Getting those 4 additional home runs, I'm not saying that he won't be able to do it, because I do think Shohei is going to pull this off. But I think the 4 home runs right now is probably the greater challenge. I think once he gets to home run 48 or even 49, he's going to start pressing a little bit. No Dodger ever in franchise history has ever hit 50 home runs in a single season. Sean Green even got capped off at 49 home runs. And so I do think there's going to be some tension here. It could come down to the final game of the year. Who knows? Shohei is so close at pulling off this feat. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be, I don't think, a slam dunk, a pure lock. Like, it might take down to the final couple games for Shohei Ohtani to pull this off. Bro man 74 dude saying, I don't think Mookie would overtake Ohtani if healthy. To be honest, he played an average shortstop. I mean, if we're gonna talk about the facts here, Mookie was the front runner, and Shohei was the one that overtook Mookie because of the injuries. So I do think there is some validity in that claim. What's up, Aaron Vaughn? If Shohei can get 1 home run and 1 steal per remaining series, he would hit the 50-50. That's a good point. That's all. If we put it down like that, get 1 home run, get 1 stolen base, then Shohei Ohtani will pull off this feat. Rick Deckard. What's up, Rick? Welcome around. Yeah, it was frustrating watching Chris Taylor play with 3 MVPs, counting on him to at least hit a sack fly, and he crashed and burned horribly. That he did.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, Dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here we go. Question from Broman74Dude. Otani will get 50-50. He has 18 games left. And because of some bad pitching coming up with the Rockies and the Marlins, he'll get it versus the Rockies. Broman74Dude calling his shot. But that is a really good point. I mean, if we're just looking at the Dodgers schedule real quick, because there's not that many games left. They've got three at home against the Chicago Cubs. And I think Kyle Hendricks might be one of the starters that are going to be pitching for the Cubs. Kyle Hendricks is probably going to retire at the end of the year because he's just been god-awful. He used to get by with throwing 88 miles per hour. Now he's throwing like 84 miles per hour, and he's been hit hard. They go to the Atlanta Braves, and the Braves have good pitching. Who knows if Shohei could even hit more than two home runs there? I'll call it a success if he gets one home run in those four games at the Braves. But then they've got three at the Marlins. The Marlins are trash. They host the Rockies for three. We know that the Rockies have awful pitching. Then they've got three against the Padres. Hopefully at that point, the division's locked up and we're not sweating bullets. And then to finish the regular season, they've got three at Coors Field. And Coors Field, as everyone knows, is a hitter's ballpark. So there's definitely reasons to be optimistic about Shohei Ohtani pulling off the 50-50 milestone. Will asking, do I think Ohtani will do it at home or on the road? So kind of looking at the schedule, since I said I think it'll come down to the final series, I think it'll come down to the final two or three games, I'll say Shohei Ohtani does it at Coors Field. So game 160 to 162, that's where Ohtani is going to pull off the accomplishment. So love seeing the chat pop off. Appreciate your guys' questions. Continue to drop your questions, drop your comments. If you haven't smashed that like button yet, please do so. The more likes, the better. That means that we can continue to pump out these shows, get to your guys' questions, and bring all the fun content. Aaron Sandoval, what's up, Aaron? You seem like a new face around here. What's going on? I don't mind people making statistical arguments for Francisco Lindor, but these people are losing me because now they're saying that Francisco Lindor should, because of vibes and leadership. Looks like he corrected some, which is simply laughable. Okay, so I think it's time to talk some Shohei Ohtani MVP and where it seems like the media currently stands. So trying to pull it up right now. John Heyman tonight, apparently just, I don't know if he was bored or the guy was mad about something or he's just looking for attention. But tonight he wrote for the New York Post on the National League MVP, making a case for an all-around play and going against apparent West Coast bias. First of all, mind blown. West Coast bias, when has that ever been a thing? West Coast bias, that is an absolute ridiculous claim right there for John Heyman. I mean, John Heyman does a pretty good job overall when it comes to reporting and breaking news. But this guy has his head so far up his ass sometimes when it comes to New York Mets stuff that he's going to make ridiculous claims. And so right now, this guy, along with some other Mets fans slash media voters, are saying that Francisco Lindor is having the more impressive season because he plays shortstop. And I'm not going to be one of those guys that say, you know, playing a defensive position doesn't matter. I mean, playing defense absolutely does matter. And if Shohei Ohtani, let's say, was hitting 30 home runs right now, 100 RBIs, 20 steals, had the same WAR, then yeah, I get the argument. Lindor should be the MVP. Lindor is having a great season in his own right. Even more kudos if he were to help get the New York Mets into the playoffs, because at one point I thought the Mets were dead in the water. And now, like I read off earlier in the show, they're tied with the Atlanta Braves for that last spot in the wild card hunt. So Francisco Lindor this season, at the age of 30, has a WAR of 7.3. That's a really good WAR. That's second best in his career. Only in 2018 with Cleveland, he had a higher WAR. But 272 batting average, meh. What's so great about 272? 342 on base, bleh. That's nothing to be crazy about either. 342 on base, 496 slugging, 136 WRC plus. I mean, 136. Shohei has a 170 plus WRC plus. 30 home runs, 84 RBIs. The 30 home runs is strong, but I mean, golly, if that's your argument for why Francisco Lindor should be MVP, because he plays a shortstop while Ohtani is simply the designated hitter, that's kind of a weak-ass argument. And I'm just trying to pull up Lindor's defensive metrics real quick. I was just curious where he's at defensively. So, yeah, okay. So fielding range, yeah, he's pretty awesome. He's got he's pretty much the best defensive shortstop this season. The outs above average, 17. That's elite stuff. So can't hate on that. Lindor has been solid. But, I mean, come on. Shohei Ohtani, look at the numbers that he's doing for the Dodgers right now. And I don't understand how this is not your National League MVP. He's hitting 291, 374 on base, nearly 1,000 OPS, 46 home runs, 40 steals. The only player in MLB history to ever have 45 home runs and 45 stolen bases in the same season, and he's got 46 and 46. And any Braves fan that's going to chime in and try to discount the stolen bases needs to shut up, because that's all they did was argue that Ronald Acuna Jr. was the MVP because of all the stolen bases he had. So I don't know why they've got to push this agenda. Do we need to remind people that Shohei Ohtani is in fact recovering from a second elbow surgery, has been rehabbing all year that elbow and has managed to pull off these amazing statistical feats? I mean, yeah, like Broman's saying here, Lindor has a 7.3 WAR, but that's because of the elite defense. Meanwhile, Shohei Ohtani is just hitting and has a 6.7 WAR with no defense. So all the offensive metrics, by and large, highly suggest that Ohtani has been the better hitter by a mile. And so I didn't even read the Heyman article, if I'm being honest, but it's just put on the clown makeup if you're saying there's West Coast bias. This is stupid. It feels like every few weeks, first it was Bryce Harper, then it was Ketel Marte, now it's Francisco Lindor, and I feel like it's because Shohei Ohtani is playing for the Dodgers, they have to discount this season. If Shohei Ohtani was playing for the Atlanta Braves, everyone would be bowing at their feet and they'd be volunteering to eat Ohtani's jock strap. If Shohei Ohtani was playing for the Mets, oh my goodness, it'd be an absolute CUM fest over this guy. But because he's playing for the Dodgers, we've got to discount him. People want to bash the Dodgers payroll, even though other teams like the Padres are paying a shit ton of money for players too. The Mets are paying more money for players. And some of them aren't even on their team anymore, like Scherzer and Verlander. So the Dodgers hate is real. People are jealous of what we're doing here. We've got an awesome ship, and we're riding. We're trying to win a World Series. And no one's going to discount the fact that we signed some awesome players because they wanted to be here. I mean, Yoshinobu Yamamoto wanted to team up with Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani didn't even get an offer from the Angels. According to Shohei, he was willing to go back to the Angels and at least give Artie Moreno a chance to match whatever the Dodgers were going to throw on the table, which ended up being $700 million. But Artie Moreno, being that the fool that he is, decided, nope, going to let him walk. They could have traded him at this past deadline, gotten the haul back, but the Angels are probably in a position for being a very bad franchise for a very, very long time, as long as Artie Moreno is running that ship. So going through the questions now, since I appreciate your guys' questions, continue to drop them along. Going to keep this show going. Hit that like button if you haven't yet. How far will the Yankees go in the playoffs? I don't know the playoff matchups yet, but if the Astros and the Yankees were to play in the ALCS, I'd pick the Astros. The Yankees are kind of just chokers. Will, my good pal Will, what is the most underrated Oasis song? Okay. Switching to music real quick. I mean, I don't know if it's underrated, but The Master Plan is probably my pick. Wasn't good enough to make any of their studio LPs, but The Master Plan is one of the best songs Noel Gallagher ever wrote. So pumped that Oasis is back together. Can't wait to see them live in Los Angeles. And you can get tickets probably on TickPick when they go on sale. Maria G, Heyman is a ridiculous person. And that transitions to Justin Yamas, Arson Judge. Yeah, I mean, remember that time John Heyman pretended to break the news that Aaron Judge, but typoed it and called him Arson Judge, said he signed with the Giants. And then he doubled down and said he heard someone yell in the hallway. And apparently that was his excuse for reporting, which is at the time a very important signing. That's pretty much in line with JP Hornstra making up the news that Shohei Ohtani had signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, but not as bad because Hornstra wrote a whole article, and this was pretty much his debut for his new team. It's just insane sometimes that these reporters do these things. Broman 74, dude, who are the Dodgers? What is the Dodgers starting rotation in the playoffs? If healthy for him, it's Yamamoto, Flaherty, Glasnow, Buehler, and Knack. They only need four starters in the playoffs, so we don't need all five. But yeah, Flaherty, Glasnow, Yamamoto, and I can't tell you who the fourth starter is yet, but I do think Walker Buehler and Landon Knack are going to battle it out for that last spot. And you kind of have to give the edge to Walker Buehler if he continues to continue to pitch the way he has the last couple starts. This is kind of a new Walker Buehler that we were hoping that we would see, is Walker Buehler adapting. He's been able to throw that curveball very effectively, and he's kind of banking less on the slider, and it's working so far. So Walker Buehler, we'll see what he does. He's got about probably four, maybe five more starts left. Roy Estrada. What's up, Roy? John Heyman is an East Coast New York reporter. What do you expect from him? Talk about calling the kettle black. That's true. That is true. Trevor Garbrandt. What's up, Trevor? I think you're new around here. Welcome to the incline. Wild to me that the Padres and Diamondbacks are fighting for their playoff lives, since it felt like they didn't lose for 2 months straight. Yeah, I mean, credit to those that kind of called it, but I know that some people said that the Padres and the Diamondbacks would fizzle out at some point, and hopefully the time is now. But of course, we've still got a few weeks left, and all it takes is for one of these teams like the Padres or the Diamondbacks to get a little bit momentum going and then getting hot for the playoffs. But the Diamondbacks, the Padres, way it's set up right now, they would battle it out in the wild card round. That's a very tightly contested series. Don't know who would win, but I know Manny Machado's been swinging a hot stick. And on the other side, Corbin Carroll, the Dodger killer, has been swinging a hot stick. So it'll be a battle. New York Mets are paying Max Scherzer and Verlander about $70 million to not play for them. Yep. Maria G, how those Giants and Astros helping us out? Yeah, credit to the Giants, credit to the Astros. They did some damage. They took some games against the Padres in Arizona. Question from Bro Man 74, dude. Who do you prefer in the playoffs, the Mets or the Diamondbacks? For him, it's the Mets. They are 9-2.
versus below 500 teams, and winning streak is overblown because they beat the White Sox, the Reds, and the Red Sox. Don't mind Ohtani shut down Lindor talk. I mean, if it's the Mets or the Diamondbacks, I would take the New York Mets. If the Dodgers can't beat the New York Mets and the NLDS, that would probably be the most embarrassing moment of my life as a Dodgers fan. I mean, look at the Mets rotation. It's nothing to go crazy about. They're getting it done with guys like Jose Quintana, David Peterson. I couldn't even tell you who else has thrown the ball for them. But the point is, the Mets don't have a formidable, scary team at all. They've got some good hitters. They've got Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor. But, I mean, come on. If we can't beat the Mets, then I don't know what to tell you. Justin Yavis, how come it seems that the Padres are playing worse with Fernando Tatis Jr.? It's a great question. I mean, Tatis came back and the Padres are losing now. But, and yeah, I mean, I even think back to the 2022 playoff run for the Padres. They didn't have Tatis. He was suspended. He did steroids. So maybe the Padres made the wrong investment with Fernando Tatis Jr. Trevor Garbrandt, is it me or does it seem like the organization doesn't love Landon Knack that much? I wouldn't go that route. I mean, Landon Knack, if I'm not mistaken, is like 27, maybe 26. And they could have given up on him a long time ago, but they didn't. They've continued to believe in him. They had continued to develop him. And it's panned out. He's made, I think, 10 starts for the Dodgers now. And there's no formula out there that appears to be working when it comes to managing these guys' workloads, because between Gavin Stone, River Ryan, Emmett Sheehan, Kyle Hurt, Nick Frosso, and so on and so forth, these guys just continue to end up on the injured list. Meanwhile, at this very moment in time, Landon Knack is actually healthy, and it seems to be to their benefit. Also, with him not being up in the majors as much, I feel like teams aren't on top of him. They don't get all the scouting reports. So it seems like every time Landon Knack makes a spot start, he's highly effective because teams don't really see what's coming. So I think the Dodgers do believe in Landon Knack. I think they just have a lot of guys that they were higher on. And unfortunately for the Dodgers, all these guys have ended up on the injured list. And so now Landon Knack gets his shot. They're not going to send him down for the rest of the season. He's not going to end up like a Michael Peterson who gets DFA'd, or Brent Honeywell that gets DFA'd and then gets called back up. So I do think that the Dodgers actually do have a lot of faith in Landon Knack. And obviously they continue to trust him with some starts in a postseason race. So I've been impressed with Landon Knack. He's actually really exceeded my expectations. Wrote him off a long time ago, thought he'd be a dud, but this guy's put it together, and a lot of respect for Landon Knack. It's not easy to go up and down all year long from the minors to the majors, and Knack's been good. Are we getting a Michael Busch revenge series? So they face the Cubs next. They got Cody Bellinger. They've got Michael Busch. To my memory, if it serves correct, Michael Busch did get some big hits against us at Wrigley Field, which feels like a long time ago, earlier this year. I'm going to say Michael Busch maybe gets... I'm trying to remember who... So Yamamoto... I'm going to say no. I'm going to say Michael Busch doesn't get his revenge. But Cody Bellinger will hit a home run against the Dodgers. Take that to the bank. You're going to bet on Prize Picks or DraftKings Sportsbook. Calling my shot, Cody Bellinger hits at least one home run in this series and gets his revenge. If you guys have any other questions or any other comments, feel free to drop them below right now. Probably near the end of the show. We're over an hour deep, but I definitely want to make sure to get to anything you guys have for me. The Dodgers have been playing some good baseball as of late. Probably not going to win 100 games, but I mean, despite all these injuries, hell of a job to have 86 wins, 86 and 57. That's a successful season. So good shit by the Dodgers. All I wanted for them was to play some good baseball in the month of September, have that momentum going into the postseason. So hopefully they keep it up. Let's see what happens. Bruce Star Gratterall should be coming back for the Dodgers any day now. He was just rehabbing down in Oklahoma City. I think the Dodgers might call him up maybe Monday or Tuesday. So they've got Yamamoto coming back on Tuesday. He'll make his return. He's been out on the injured list since July. My early expectations for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, I'm going to guess that the Dodgers cap him off between 50 and 60 pitches. He'll probably go 3, maybe 4 innings if we're lucky. And I think that's a good start for Yamamoto. It's going to be a really high, high marquee matchup because he's going against Shota Imanaga for the Chicago Cubs. And there's a potential showdown between these two to kick off the 2025 season when the Dodgers and Cubs face each other in Tokyo. So this will be a nice preview. First time these two would be going head to head against each other at the Major League Baseball level. Yamamoto versus Imanaga. So I'm hoping that Yamamoto, 60 pitches, 3 to 4 innings. I think that'd be a huge win. He's just got to get built up and be able to go 5 by October. I think 5 innings is kind of the magic number for Dodgers starters in the postseason. Very rarely do they let anyone pitch it to the 6. So as long as Yamamoto can get up to 5 innings, we'll be happy. We'll be really happy with that. Question coming from Broman74. Dude, will Bellinger get the same standing ovation every at-bat like Justin Turner did? I'll say no. He'll get his first at-bat. Well, it's not Cody Bellinger's first time returning to Dodger Stadium. You'd have to pull up the tape from last season and kind of refresh your memory. But I do remember Cody Bellinger got a huge standing ovation when he made his return to Dodger Stadium. So huge that I'm pretty sure it resulted in a pitch clock violation and Bellinger was charged a strike because the umpire couldn't recognize the moment. But he'll get some standing up ovation. He'll get some applause. He'll get some ovation. But no, it won't be as big as Justin Turner because, like I said, Bellinger's moment was last year. And also, I mean, head-to-head, I mean, Bellinger won an MVP, had the huge home run in 2020 NLCS Game 7, but I feel like Justin Turner probably did a little bit more for the Dodgers and more of an influential clubhouse leader, was a Dodger longer. I feel like there's probably more Justin Turner Dodger fans out there than Cody Bellinger, but maybe I'm reading that one wrong. Maria G just obsessed with the Yankees for some reason. How deep of a run do you think the Yankees make? I'll say they lose to the Astros in the ALCS. So yeah, if you guys have any final questions, feel free to drop them below. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap up the show right now. But just to kind of recap, Dodgers took the series against the Guardians. They got the Cubs next. Jack Flaherty has been awesome. We talked about how Jack Flaherty could be setting himself up for being the Dodgers game one starter. He's been awesome, a sensational post deadline pickup for the Dodgers. Gavin Stone with the injury that obviously hurt the Dodgers, and Mookie Betts has been on fire. Another guy that's been really good for the Dodgers as of late is Max Muncy. So glad we got him back to return this season because he would have been a huge loss. But, I mean, Max Muncy over his last 15 games has a .431 on base percentage, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. He's been working the count. He's been getting walks, 11 walks. So Max Muncy has been awesome. And also a shout-out to Tommy Edman. Great pickup as well. He's hitting .269 for the Dodgers, has 7 RBIs, 4 stolen bases, and he plays great defense at premium positions. He's been a lockdown defender in center field. He's been good at shortstop as well. I just love the spark. I love the energy that Tommy Edman's been providing. And shout out to the Dodgers bullpen as well. I mean, the Dodgers bullpen has just been really good as of late. Kopech, Phillips, Hudson, Vesia. I mean, talk about the season Alex Vesia has had for the Dodgers. I mean, it's been one of the most quiet, dominant seasons I've seen as from a Dodgers reliever. 1.73 ERA for Alex Vesia, 77 strikeouts across 57 innings thrown, a whip under one, 59 games thrown. So this might be the final question of the night. Do you think the Dodgers would be the Yankees? Do you think the Dodgers would be the highest rating ever? He's asking, would the Dodgers and Yankees World Series be the highest ratings ever? No, wouldn't be ever because there's so many cable cut quarters. But of the last 10 years, absolutely. And I think it'd be very hyped to see the Dodgers and Yankees in a World Series. The star power would just be off the charts with between Judge, Soto, Garrett Cole. On the other side, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Yamamoto, Glasnow. So I would love to see it. I think it would be so good for Major League Baseball. Why don't the umpires rig it so that we get this dream matchup? So it'd be sensational. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Incline Dodgers. For programming updates, we'll be back on Tuesday post-game talking Yamamoto's return for the Dodgers. If you're listening on the audio feed, hit that subscribe button, leave a review, drop a comment. If you're watching the YouTube page, drop a comment below. Talk to me. Who do you think the Dodgers game four starter would be? And where would you rate Jack Flaherty in terms of deadline pickups? Would he be in your top three? Would he not be? So let me know. Thank you guys for tuning in. Everyone have a great rest of your week or great week ahead as it's Sunday. And go Dodgers. Kevin Klein signed.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at ohiovoterguide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.